From Spokane Public Radio, it's SPR News Today. I'm Owen Henderson. It's Tuesday, June 30th, 2026. On today's show, Washington and Oregon election officials are breathing a sigh of relief after the Supreme Court yesterday ruled against a challenge to mail-in voting. Plus, Spokane's affordable housing developers want the city council to delay a vote on the right to cooling proposal. They say the ordinance's current language could prevent future affordable housing development. And Bosnian community members in the Northwest are already celebrating their home country's World Cup team. Last week in Seattle, the Dragons, or Golden Lilies, depending on whom you ask, qualified for the knockout round for the first time ever. Those stories and more coming up on SPR News Today. Washington, Oregon, and other states can continue to count ballots that arrive by mail after Election Day under an opinion issued by the Supreme Court yesterday. Oregon Public Broadcasting's Dirk Vanderhart reports.
Conservative groups had challenged a Mississippi law that accepts ballots that arrive up to 5 days after Election Day, so long as they are postmarked on or before the election. The GOP-aligned challengers said the policies ran afoul of federal law, but the Supreme Court disagreed. Two conservative justices sided with the court's three liberals to uphold Mississippi's law. The ruling was a relief to election officials in Oregon and Washington, which both accept late-arriving ballots. Oregon Secretary of State Tobias Reed, a Democrat, called the decision a win for Oregonians. But Reed also cautioned that recent changes within the post office may delay postmarks. He said voters who use mail to submit their ballots should do so at least a week before Election Day. I'm Dirk Vanderhart reporting.
Spokane County Auditor Vicki Dalton is also relieved by the Supreme Court's decision.
Now it means that our voters will not be disenfranchised if they happen to put their ballot into the mail stream 2 days before Election Day and it doesn't arrive to us until 2 to 3 days after Election Day, which is a pretty common occurrence anymore with the U.S. Postal Service.
Dalton says a court decision invalidating Washington's rules would have caused chaos.
So the county auditors and the Secretary of State's office had already been working on contingency plans, including messaging. We'll probably still go ahead with a considerable amount of the messaging, which is don't wait. Get your ballot in early if you're going to mail it.
Like Reed, Dalton also suggests mailing ballots at least a week before Election Day. After that, she recommends taking ballots to an official election drop box. Ballots for Washington's August primary elections have already been mailed to military and overseas voters. They'll go out in the mail to Spokane County voters on July 15th. As Spokane continues to work to strengthen its criminal justice and crisis support systems, a new behavioral health facility is coming to downtown in an attempt to fill service gaps. Officials broke ground yesterday on a joint Chaz Health and Frontier Behavioral Health clinic near the intersection of Division and Sprague. Chaz and Frontier leaders say once the 10,000-square-foot facility is completed, it will offer primary care, mental health services, and addiction treatment all in the same location. That means patients wouldn't have to try to navigate a network of referrals and providers on their own. About 40% of the funding for the new site comes from federal and state grants. Frontier will foot the rest of the bill. We should note, Chaz is a financial supporter of SPR. Spokane's affordable housing developers are asking the city to rewrite its right to cooling ordinance. The proposed version would require landlords to install air conditioning in all rental units by 2031 to make sure units are kept at 80 degrees or less. When the ordinance was first read last week, multiple members of the Spokane Low Income Housing Consortium spoke about the risk they say it poses to current and future affordable housing. Catholic Charities' Jonathan Malahan says his organization already provides cooling, but he's worried the specific language of the ordinance might make new projects impossible.
Our preliminary review indicates that compliance with this ordinance in combination with existing requirements such as the Evergreen Sustainable Development Standards and current energy codes may require developers to install more expensive heating and cooling systems in each bedroom. We estimate that this could increase development costs by at least $12,000 per apartment or roughly 5% per unit.
Other affordable housing advocates called the proposal an unfunded mandate, especially as federal housing vouchers get stripped away and rents remain capped by federal standards. Affordable housing organizations are currently meeting with the city to bring forward an alternative option they believe would improve habitability for tenants without stunting future projects. They're asking council to delay its final vote on the proposal, which is currently set for July 15th. Coeur d'Alene community members are remembering the two firefighters shot to death while responding to a fire on Canfield Mountain a year ago yesterday. As first responders arrived last June, a man started shooting at them, killing two and injuring a third. Police say the shooter started the fire and ultimately took his own life. Idaho Department of Lands Director Dustin Miller spoke this month about the incident during a fire preparedness press conference.
At the end of the day, we want to keep people safe. No matter what the threat is on the fire line, I want people coming home at the end of the day. So that communication and how we respond is critical.
Miller says the incident made clear the importance of communication between first responder agencies.
If we've learned anything from this, it's these partnerships and that constant stream of communication matters.
The victims were Kootenai County Fire Battalion Chief Frank Harwood and Coeur d'Alene Fire Battalion Chief John Morrison. The U.S. men's national soccer team is in the knockout round of the World Cup. The Americans play the team from Bosnia and Herzegovina tomorrow afternoon at 5 o'clock in Santa Clara, California. Bosnian fans may feel like they're playing with house money. Their national team advanced to the knockout round last week in Seattle. It's the first time the team's ever made it that far. Northwest News Network contributor Grace Madigan has more about what it means to the Northwest's Bosnian community to be competing on the world's biggest soccer stage.
More than a decade after its first tournament appearance, Bosnia is competing in the World Cup for just its second time. For Bosnians like Milija Jusupovic, who immigrated to Seattle in 1998 after the war, it's a point of pride that her home country will be seen in a light that doesn't have to do with its past.
Bosnia will get brought up, and people who are older immediately remember the war. They're like, oh, it's the war. And then your country is constantly tied to, like, the hardest part of your life and, like, the thing that everybody has struggled through.
The Bosnian War, which lasted from 1992 to 1995, resulted in the second largest diaspora in the world, according to the UN. Around 2 million Bosnians live abroad, and about 350,000 live in the U.S. today. Jusupovic was just 11 years old when she left Bosnia with her family.
We basically had, like, time to pack one bag and flee that city for another city. And that was kind of what we ended up doing throughout the war, was basically trying to dodge the primary fighting zones. Some of my family members were not so fortunate.
It is estimated that more than 100,000 people were killed during the three-year war, including 8,000 Bosnian Muslims and what the UN considers a genocide. Today, the country continues to recover economically and reframe its image from a war-torn country.
When another event, like the World Cup, happens, you're reminded, like, hey, we've made it. We've made it through a really, really horrible time in our history. It shows the resilience that I've known Bosnian people and people just from that part of the world to just be incredibly resilient.
Thousands of Bosnians descended upon Seattle for its pivotal match against Qatar. People of Bosnian heritage from across the Northwest also made the trip. Alma Zakonovic drove up from Vancouver, Washington. For her, seeing so many Bosnians was moving.
It feels like we were home.
Yeah.
After this many years living here, yeah, feels like home.
Fans celebrated the win long after the final whistle at a pub just around the corner from Seattle Stadium. Father and son Armin and Mehmed Imamovic attended the game from Augusta, Georgia. Both were overwhelmed with emotion after the game.
It means everything. The whole country, Tuzla that my dad comes from and everything like that, it means so much for everybody there. And this man has never missed a game, ever. He does whatever he can to watch a Bosnia game. This is his team. Like, he will rep it till the day that he dies.
For a team that statistically was unlikely to even qualify for the World Cup, fans are ecstatic to have made it as far as they have.
You know, whatever happens next, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't
like
matter. We did the future.
What we're supposed to do, you
exactly.
know. We went to the next round.
We
you
did
know,
what
that's
we
all
wanted
that's
to do. But, you know, if we do win, you already know we're going to ride till the wheels fall off. You know, if we don't, the future of this team is very promising.
In Seattle, I'm Grace Madigan.
Volite Bosno!
Volite Bosno!
Volite Bosno!
The Bosnia and Herzegovina Heritage Association of Spokane says it estimates about 150 people of Bosnian descent made the trip from Spokane to Seattle last week to see the game. SPR News Today is a production of Spokane Public Radio. Reporting today was contributed by Dirk Vanderhart, Doug Nadvornik, Eliza Billingham, Chantel Ramirez, Grace Madigan, and me, Owen Henderson. I'm also your host and producer. Thanks for listening. It's SPR.